On this week's episode of 90 Degrees, we are joined by Fabian Sommer, writer for TheHammer.bet and analyst for the Matchbook preview show every Thursday with Rob Bezola, Drew Dinsick, and Daniel Hussey. Today, we are talking about all things NFL playoffs, including futures, teasers, and coaching impact. Let's dive in to the sharp side and look at the right angles in sports betting.
Big bomb, bomb, bangers.
Boogie down.
Ladies and gentlemen, sharps and squares, bangers, Jews and Gentiles, welcome back to episode 14 of 90 Degrees, the show where we discuss the right sports betting angles. I'm your host, Kevin Davis, and today we're welcoming in from Germany, Fabian Sommer. You can find him at Twitter at Suma810, that is S as in snake, UU, like underdog, underdog, M as in Mary, A as in apples, 810. Fabian, what is the word?
Kevin, thank you very much for having me. First of all, I gotta say that I have not had this great of an intro in a very long time on a podcast. So was amazing. And I'm looking forward to talk some NFL playoffs with you.
Yeah, well, I'm glad to have you on. NFL playoffs are a great interest to our viewers, or virtually any sports betting podcast viewers in the States. We love our gridiron football. I'm bigger on Canadian football, like our friends up north, our college football. But because the site I work for, thegameday.com, has an audience really in NFL. I got an NFL playoff simulation article coming out. So please check that out at thegameday.com. Now, for your general betting strategy, you know, what are you going to be doing differently in the playoffs that you're not doing during the regular season?
I think in the playoffs, it's, at least for me, almost entirely matchup based. I mean, there are some angles to look at, like first year head coach, first year quarterback, like rookie quarterbacks have done very poorly in the past when it comes to the playoffs, when the stage gets bigger, when on the other side there are more experienced quarterbacks, more experienced coaching staffs and stuff like that. But in general, to me, it all boils down to the matchup, because when it comes to the playoffs, we have 16 or 17 weeks of data on all those teams. Guys will actually play even if they are banked up. And teams will usually play up to their strength, play up to their weaknesses, attack opposing weaknesses, attack opposing strength. Situational spots are very hard to find in the playoffs. So I actually appreciate it. I mean, in general, it's harder to find big edges in the playoffs because the market only focuses on six games, then four games, then two games, etc. But I still like to bet on the playoffs because you can really entirely focus on the matchup. And I like to put myself in the, let's say, form of a coach or play caller and think, hey, we have this amount of data on the opposing team. These are their strengths. These are their weaknesses. How do we match up with that? How can we attack those strengths and weaknesses? And that way I try to find some potential matchup edges. In general, the volume during the playoffs is usually pretty low. Like there could be the possibility that I will only bet like two games next week, maybe three or four, but usually there's lower volume in the playoffs, but it's, I think, a little bit more exciting to bet on the playoffs because you can talk all day about the upcoming matchup.
So you like it because it's fun to talk about, but it's not your biggest edges. And I guess you're not looking to maximize your betting volume so much, since you also focus on the other type of football, from what I recall from your other interviews.
Yeah, I mean, growing up in Germany, like everyone at some point becomes dedicated to soccer in some form. I've also been a big soccer fan in my teens, but with the NFL, with watching more NFL, with betting on it, with shifting my focus on it, I'm not very interested in soccer anymore nowadays. I watch the World Cup. I follow some games of my favorite football club, which is Schalke 04. Not doing so well nowadays, but yeah, in general, even if the NFL is over, I will not switch too much towards soccer.
Now, are you able to ever walk in any bars and put on an NFL game, or everyone looks at you like a Martian?
Oh, no. I mean, on Sundays in some of the bigger cities like Berlin, Hamburg, Munich or something, you will always find bars that show football, American football, NFL, or also some college football. College football has also risen in terms of attention over in Germany. We have a broadcast on German free TV that shows college games every Saturday, that shows some bowl games and stuff like that. So yes, but it's still not that common to walk into a bar and watch the NFL. That is still very soccer focused, but the NFL audience or football audience in general is growing over in Germany, and I would almost call it like the second or third most favorite sports over here.
I mean, that's incredible. I would never thought that you could watch college football on like a national TV broadcast in Germany. You know, basically, because if you're a really good soccer player in Germany, you're not going to university and playing. You're going to the team's youth team.
Yeah, yes, exactly. Like, we don't have these.
You guys actually value education.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't have this college sports system like you have over in the US. If there are university teams, it's basically just for fun. Or maybe there might be a random university championship, but you won't see it on the TV or something.
Yeah, because I think one of the German basketball teams that's in the professional league is also a college team, a university team, I mean.
Oh, I would not know which one because I don't follow that at all.
But I only focus on the international play. So the only German basketball players I know about are Alba Berlin and Bayern Munich.
Oh, yes, yes. Bayern Munich has done some major strides in terms of basketball over the past decade.
So now what are you looking for in terms of concussion protocols for the playoffs, particularly mentioning that even though we're recording this on Thursday, right before week 18, you could have a situation where Tua is in the playoffs. And, you know, if you ask any doctor, they say he shouldn't be playing at all because he has so many concussions.
Yeah.
But if you ask any football player, they want him to play like hell because he's a great football player and they don't care about concussions. So if you have a concussion prone player in the playoffs, you know, how do you handicap, you know, whether they're lying about their health status that they can play?
It depends on the timeline, I would argue. So usually when a player gets concussed, let's say on a Sunday, it's basically 50-50 whether he will play the next week. And usually on the Wednesday or Thursday injury report, you can get towards 80, 90, sometimes 95% confidence level whether that guy is going to play or not. Because if that guy logs a DNP on Wednesday, that's the first bad sign. So the probability of him playing decreases from 50 to like 25%. And if he logs another DNP on Thursday, that's pretty much not going to happen that he's going to play. And with the limited status, it's always very tricky because you can have a limited practice if you are in like stage 4 of the protocol, but if you cannot advance towards stage 5, you will not get cleared by an independent doctor in time on Sunday morning to play. With Tua Tagovailoa, it's interesting because we simply don't know anything, like anything at all. First of all, the Pats have to lose, the Dolphins have to win in order for the Dolphins to make the wildcard round. And then it's basically a wait and see kind of mode. I would not expect that all books are going to open those lines on Monday morning if the Dolphins make the wildcard round. I think they will play at Buffalo, if so, but I cannot expect like us as a betting community to know whether Tua is going to play on Sunday night or something. So I think this is going to be a wait and see approach. Right now, just my gut feeling is that he's not going to play anymore this year. But if they make the playoffs, like they are not going to have any shot with Skylar Thompson. So maybe they might force the issue. But I think we need to wait until Monday or Tuesday for some press conferences to get any clue about his potential availability. And with all other players, I mean, for example, I think Devontae Parker is still in the concussion protocol, but for 2 weeks now. He did not practice today. If the Pats make the playoffs somehow and play at Buffalo next week, this could be a classic example of this guy has been in the concussion protocol for 2 weeks now. What are the chances of him finally getting cleared this week and stuff like that? But for Tua, I think it's probably the most prominent concussion discussion right now. And if the Dolphins indeed make the playoffs, we're all going to wait on Monday or Tuesday on any news on Tua Tagovailoa and then also on Teddy Bridgewater, because Bridgewater has a dislocated pinky. It looks like he might not play this week against the Jets. It will probably be Skylar Thompson. But next week, with another week of resting his dislocated pinky, could he end up playing? Don't know.
I mean, I guess with a dislocated pinky, it's a much different protocol than a concussion. You just check the pinky.
Yes. Yes, you just check the pinky and you just check the grip, because the pinky is important when you roll that football when throwing. And if you cannot get a proper grip, you basically cannot play. So it's a pain tolerance thing and a grip thing. And this is something that you cannot possibly know on Monday or Tuesday. And we will have to wait until Wednesday whether Teddy can actually have some form of a limited practice, I would say.
So where do you learn about like the impact of each specific injury on each player, as opposed to just knowing if they're out or not and basing your handicap on that?
I think studying injuries, I mean, I'm not a doctor. I don't know a whole lot about this stuff, but over the years, you basically build some form of an experience which helps you guide yourself throughout the week, because anticipating injury statuses is one of the biggest parts of handicapping, in my opinion, at least to me. So learning about injuries, learning about the impact of injuries is very important. For example, calf injuries. So let's say a player has a strained calf. For defensive linemen, that's a pretty big deal, not so much for a few other positions, because defensive linemen, when they rush, they have to stem with their calf muscles. And if you have a strained calf, you basically cannot do that. So if there's a defensive lineman with a strained calf and he has to leave the game on Sunday, there's a very, very small chance that he will be able to play next week. So in that case, you can basically say like 80-90% that guy's out, like we saw with Vita Vea a few weeks ago, or Quinnen Williams a few weeks ago. Strained calves for defensive linemen are no bueno. The same goes for hamstrings for like wide receivers or cornerbacks, for example, because they have to cut very suddenly and very sharply. And when you are playing on a bad hammy, that's not going to work out properly. So if a cornerback has to leave the game with a hamstring pull, much higher chance he's going to miss the next week than, let's say, a Nick Bosa, who had a hamstring injury, I think 3 weeks ago. He did not practice all week, but he was somehow able to play on Sunday, because for a guy like Nick Bosa, the hamstring is not as important as for like Tre'Davious White on the same team.
So I was really interested in when you're talking about looking at the injury reports and then using that information to put a probability on each player of playing. How did you get to the point of putting a specific number on a percent chance of each player playing?
It depends on what injury it was, what do we know on Sunday night, Monday morning, and then how that develops or evolves throughout the week. So let's say a cornerback has a hamstring pull on Sunday, then I basically have him out for the next week, because usually in that scenario, these guys have a very tough time playing the next week. But sometimes it could be like a precaution that the coach is saying, hey, we are leading, let's say, by 14 or 17 in the fourth quarter. You have a small hammy pull, so you will not play anymore today. And then on Monday and Tuesday, coaches come out and say, yeah, he's probably going to be limited this week, but we don't have too much of a concern for the upcoming Sunday. So that's basically like, first of all, what was the actual injury? What can we gather from coaches speak like after the game? What do we know based on experience? What are possibly some Twitter fantasy doctors saying about this injury, about that tape study of that injury? And then what can we gather from the injury reports on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday? If there's a hamstring pull and we are not sure whether that guy's going to play and he logs a DNP, that's very likely that he's going to be out. DNP limited, we would need to wait for Friday for a final confirmation. But in the end, it's basically individual for every single injury. Yes, sometimes you can already rule a player out on Sunday night for the next week, but sometimes it's just waiting maybe until the last minute on Friday on the final practice report.
What about, in terms of in-play betting? What sort of injury information are you looking for if someone's injured during the game?
I don't really bet live, so I'm probably not the best guy to answer that. I would guess that sometimes when you see an injury in-game, like a guy needs to be carted off or something, I mean, he's going to be out. Sometimes guys need to enter the blue tent, and then when they come out, you know pretty fast or quickly whether the guy is going to resume playing, because beat reporters are getting the information from the sideline. They are tweeting out like, this guy's questionable or doubtful to return. If it happens in the fourth quarter, that's also a question of whether they even want that guy back into the game. I think those would be the question that a bettor who bets a lot of in-game stuff would have to answer.
Yeah, I mean, I know for like certain sports that have less market attention, I'll look at the injury report, and if I see a bunch of probables or questionables, sometimes I'll just wait for the game to start and see who's in there, and then wait for the next commercial break and hammer the side where the line hasn't adjusted because the live trader didn't take into account the probables and questionables that are in or out of the game.
That makes sense to me.
Now, in terms of like looking at the matchups, because it's all about which team faces each other, and so much of that depends on their seeding. So once the seeds are set and someone's looking into futures, what are some things that will be overlooked in terms of potential matchups and future rounds if they win their first game?
Yes, I mean, when you are interested in betting futures, let's say championship futures, Super Bowl futures, it's not just about how good is a team or about how undervalued are they. What I'm willing to say is that you have to think about the most realistic path throughout the playoffs. So, for example, Chiefs are going to have a bye week and then they're going to play the lowest seed. Bills are likely going to host the Patriots or the Dolphins or the Steelers next week. So the first round is going to be rather easily, and then they will likely also host the Bengals or potentially the Ravens, for example. So this is basically something some guys are able to write code and simulate all the potential matchups and come up with a probability. And when you're not able to do that, you can think just logically about potential most realistic playoff path. How do these teams match up with each other, and which team might have an easier path compared to the other teams in the conference?
Yeah, I mean, for the Bills, for example, they are facing another AFC East team. Even though they're the more superior team, are they potentially vulnerable to be upset because they're playing a team that has played them twice already? So I see that a lot in Canadian football, which I bet a lot, where you have nine teams, so a lot of them play each other three times during the year.
Yes, I get what you're saying. So divisional matchups are usually closer than non-divisional matchups. That's something to keep in mind. But then I would always come back to the matchup. Think about what happened in the first two matchup during the regular season. Was one team missing some key players? Maybe some team was missing some players on defense, some on offense, and one team was shorthanded. How did it play out? How could it play out this time with all those guys being healthy? But in general, I think that I would not put too much stock thinking about whether teams have already played each other twice, because that basically counts for both sides.
What about, you know, teams that go into the playoffs with a strong record and seed, but they were benefited from positive variance, winning games by missed field goals or last minute field goals, or getting ties when they were supposed to lose, or I could just go on down the list.
Yeah.
What do you do about those teams? Because I think some of them, like the Vikings, for example, the market is adjusted, but there may be others where it hasn't adjusted or is over adjusted. So how do you factor that into your handicap?
I think that this stuff nowadays is pretty much adjusted and already priced in. Next week, we will see this between the Vikings and the Giants. That number was, I think, Vikings -4 2 weeks ago at home. Now they have lost two offensive linemen. The Giants are going to get some players back. So I would be absolutely shocked if we saw Vikings -4 again. So the market nowadays is usually pretty good at pricing that stuff in. Like last year, the Las Vegas Raiders, for example, they were very fortunate to get into the playoffs. Lots of close games. Yes, I saw your hat.
Because I'm an NWA fan. And they always wear Raiders gear.
Okay.
I'm a Giants fan.
Giants fan.
Yeah, they're not a surprise. I mean, I grew up one, but they play like 15 minutes away anyway, so.
Okay.
Because even though they're called the New York Giants, they play in New Jersey.
Yes, I might know that.
But I'm not going to hate, because we're part of the NYC metro area.
Okay. So do you have any chance to maybe travel to Philadelphia if they play there in the divisional round?
I mean, I probably won't go to the game, but, you know, that's not a like an inconvenient drive. It's a good day trip.
Okay, cool.
But then I have to be surrounded by Eagles fans. Or any football fans.
I would guess that Eagles' home game in the playoffs could be a great atmosphere. Even if you're a Giants
fan. I think I'll just show up wearing Saskatchewan Rough Rider gear and see what happens.
How did they do this year?
The Rough Riders did poorly.
Okay.
So I need to use, because they're publicly owned, so I need to use my ownership share to like change the franchise around, hire you to be director of analytics. Maybe Rob Pizzola, because maybe they need someone with Canadian citizenship.
Yeah. I mean, I might.
I think he's an Argos fan, so I don't know.
I don't know exactly. I know that he watches Canadian football, but I don't know to what degree, if we are keeping it within the.
All I know is he thinks I'm ridiculous because I follow it more than he does, and he's Canadian. But to each its own. Now,
we stopped at the Raiders. I guess. Yes. For example, last year, the Raiders were, I would say, very fortunate to get into the playoffs. And they were priced like that. Like, I think they were in the +6.5 range at Cincinnati, even though they were like a 9-8 or 10-7 team or something like that. So I think that the market nowadays is pricing that stuff like luck factors and so forth very good.
So I guess they're not so much worried about square bettors looking at the standings saying, Vikings, come on, you know, they're such a high price and look how well they were. They say, you know what? We're going to take a hit on that because we know that the number is the number.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, these markets get shaped by, let's say, sharp accounts anyway. So there might be a scenario in which, let's say, the Vikings are going to be -3 at home against the Giants, and there are going to be lots of bettors who will like the Vikings, but it might not move towards 3.5 because there will be so much resistance on the Giants.
So now, how do you change up your strategy on handicapping games for the playoffs versus the regular season?
I don't really change it up at all because I'm usually also very, very matchup focused. So when I handicap games, what comes primarily is the matchup on the field. So and when it comes to the playoffs, I think the interesting thing is that early in the season, we could be completely wrong on some teams. Like, for example, this year was very insane because I was dead wrong on like 5 or 6 teams. For example, Colts. I was very high on the Colts going into the season because I thought Matt Ryan would have 2 years left in the tank, decent offensive line, Frank Reich. Those weapons were not that bad on paper. And I mean, my priors got completely destroyed.
And of course, his opponents.
Yes. Denver Broncos, for example. I was very, very high on them. I was high on their defense, which basically played up to expectations. But I was also high on their offense because the offensive line was kind of decent. Russell Wilson, the only bad stretch that he played was doing that collapsed middle finger. Other than that, he was very fine in recent weeks, years. Jerry Jeudy, Curtis Sutton, I really thought that this could be a top 10 offense. And again, Pryor's got completely destroyed. But, I mean, that is a process where during the season you have to adjust. You have to listen or basically look at recent data and basically marry in-season data or also qualitative data with your preseason priors. And at some point you gotta make a hard switch and you gotta accept that you were dead wrong on the team. But when it comes to the playoffs, like, there is nothing that you could be crazily wrong about because it's one game and you have 16 or 17 games of data. So sometimes there might be the chance that a backup quarterback rolls in. That's a different story. But when it's a team with, or let's say it's a matchup with both starting quarterbacks and there are not too many injuries, you usually have a pretty good grasp, and you also see it in the market movement where both of those teams stand in general. And you cannot really get caught by super surprise like you did, or like I did with the Broncos and Colts earlier in the season.
So I guess the one major difference is because of all that data, the result is going to be closer to the closing line than the beginning of the season.
I would need to look it up, but when I checked on that, I think that was the case, yes.
Does that mean teasers at the right numbers could potentially be a good betting angle?
Yes, I like betting teasers in the playoffs for sure. So as soon as you get an advantage teaser opportunity with a total that is not too high, I think in the playoffs where games might potentially be played closer, I think the less variance you have, the better teaser options become, I would say.
So it wouldn't be a good situation for a reverse teaser unless you can reverse tease totals. Yes. But if it's a regular teaser, obviously you want to follow the rules and, you know, look for the right variations, where they're 2-team, 3-team, 4-point, 6-point.
Yeah, so usually you want to do the classic advantage teaser, like 6-point or 6.5, going through the 3 and the 7. That's also something that I would primarily focus on, but I mean, I would not call it degenerate, but if you are just interested in playing a teaser, I would not say you should not play like a minus seven favorite down to minus one in the playoffs or something. So I think those opportunities definitely are there, present themselves in the playoffs.
What about, you know, instead of just doing a teaser, doing alt lines, depending on the pricing? Like instead of selling the points, you potentially, should I say the B word, buy points, but like more than one, like a lot of points.
Yeah.
And look at what the pricing is.
Yeah. Again, it depends on the pricing. If you think, I mean, sometimes matchups in the NFL are not linear. So you always, when you think of it, when you simulate a game, let's say 10,000 times, whether you do it by code or you just do it in your head, sometimes there are matchups that might be more like a bell-shaped curve. And sometimes there are matchups with some more variance towards the upside or the downside that have a, let's say, bigger tail to one side of the distribution. So, for example, Brock Purdy. Brock Purdy, four or five regular season starts, first playoff game ever. I would argue that despite the 49ers offense rolling, despite it being Kyle Shanahan, I would argue that if they play, let's say, the Green Bay Packers, who have a very sneakily good passing defense, I would argue that for Brock Purdy, there's more variance or there's a fatter tail towards the downside as compared to other quarterbacks in the wildcard round, for example. So if you're interested in betting the Packers next week, depending on the price, this would be a game where I would rather look at alternate spreads compared to others.
Yeah, that's a good angle to look at. Because, I mean, right now I have the 49ers as one of the worst playoff bets for futures. So it's going to be interesting to see how that changes once we get more data on Brock Purdy, whether teams are adjusting to him, whether he's regressing to his mean as a first-year starting quarterback. Now, for first-year head coaches, how do you know, factor that they're a good deal worse than veteran head coaches? Like, how do you quantify their impact?
Yeah, so you can basically look at historic results and look at how first-year coaches have fared in the playoff against expectations. So how did they perform against the spread? That's something. But also, I think that there are some coaches who are, even in their first year, better than others. Let's take Brian Daboll, for example. I think that the Giants coaching staff is very, very good. So I would probably be a little bit higher on them than compared to maybe, I don't know, I actually don't have a great example right now. I mean, Doug Peterson in the AFC is also a very experienced head coach. Let's say there would be a defensive coordinator in his first year as the head coach. Or let's say the Denver Broncos would have sneaked into the playoffs. And it's Nathaniel Hackett, who had tremendous failures when it comes to in-game management and stuff like that. That's someone where I would be very down on in the wildcard round, but I would be much higher on guys like Mike McDaniel, for example. I think Mike McDaniel is a very great offensive mind. He's doing some smart in-game coaching. So I would be higher on the Mike McDaniels and Brian Daboll's of the world as compared to maybe the Hackett's of the world.
Now, does the pace of the game change during the playoffs? Are teams more likely to be conservative with their lead? Or do they just keep playing to the same tendencies as the regular season?
I think pace doesn't change dramatically on average. It might only depend depending on the matchup. For example, let's use, what is a good example? The Packers. The Packers, I think, have a very slow pace, and I don't expect that to change in a neutral situation. Like when they, if they are behind, like by two or three touchdowns at San Francisco, this will absolutely change. But in general, I don't think that the Packers would be a team that would change their approach. the Bucks offense is at its best when it's going no huddle. They don't do it very often, but if they go no huddle, they are very good. And with kind of a bye week this week, because I don't think they will focus too much on the Atlanta Falcons with their starters, they might make a few adjustments of, hey, let's do more no huddle, more play action, stuff like that. But in general, on average, I don't think that the general approach of those offenses changes too dramatically independent of the matchup.
Yeah, Bucks are an interesting team because when I watch them play, I think, wow, this is like not as good as the other Bucks teams recently, which is to be somewhat expected when you have a geriatric quarterback. But then I put the simulation together and I plug the numbers in, and because they get good seeding because they're going to win their division. So that means they get a home field for the first round, since many people may not realize this. They base the seeding on, you know, the top four seeds are the division winners with the best four records. 5, 6, and 7 are the best records for non-division winners. It's not like basketball or wildcard teams in baseball. Well, not, I shouldn't say baseball, just basketball or hockey, where they base it on the best regular season record. Now, let's say Tampa Bay, they have their home field. They do well in the first round. Is there a chance that going into the conference semifinals that they'll be overvalued, or is the market going to correct that pretty quickly?
Very good question. I think that the Bucks were consistently overrated this season because the market was very high on them, but they did not cover a lot of spreads. So the Bucks are probably the most interesting case when it comes to that, because yes, they were consistently overvalued by the market. Let's see how the market prices them next week against Dallas, and then how the market might react to a potential win against the Cowboys at home. Because, I mean, this is still a team with a good quarterback. I don't think that Tom Brady was their biggest issue on offense at all this year. They still have two decent, at least one very good right tackle, one kind of average left tackle. They might get Ryan Jensen back. They still have Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, and Julio Jones, who, yeah, he's not practicing this week, but I think he should be fine next week. So they still have most of the ingredients for a deep playoff run, but the market was consistently overvaluing them. They did not play up to expectations. And I think there's going to be a dangerous team in the playoffs because of all that experience at quarterback. And if they somehow find a good wave and click on offense a little bit, I think they will be a tough matchup for the Dallas Cowboys.
I mean, I feel like I'm holding my nose betting on them, but I gotta, you know, trust the numbers I put together on how much they benefit from home field in the first round.
Yeah.
But it's just hard looking at them inflating their record by playing the Falcons, Panthers, and Saints twice. And then the other 11 games on top of that, how they did in those.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
And then I remember the two Giants teams that won in my lifetime.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it's actually four Giants teams that won in my lifetime, but I only remember two of them.
I also only remember two. Yeah, I mean, the Buccaneers also did look poorly against bad teams at times. So, but that one will be very tough because this is a team that could be very, very good when the playoffs start. And all of a sudden, Tom Brady is slinging it down the field and nobody understands why. This is definitely a scenario, I think. We had these, let's say, losing record wildcard teams in the past, like the Cardinals 2013 or something with a backup quarterback. But I think this Bucks team, despite the record, could still be much better than what their record is saying.
Now, is there like a chance where it's something like other sort of elimination tournaments. Mainly I'm thinking of the NCAA March Madness, where a team has been underperforming all year and then they get hot and you have to adjust their power rating pretty quickly. Is there a scenario where you have one of these barely above 500 teams making the playoffs and they do really well in the first round and you adjust their power rating and it changes the calculus? Or are the ratings for all 14 playoff teams going to remain fairly consistent during the playoffs?
They should, in my opinion, remain fairly consistent, because what could the Bucks potentially do in the first round that we would change our ratings drastically on them? I mean, we know what these teams are, and I think one single result should not cloud our thinking of them or our ratings too much.
I mean, the only variable I can think of is if the opposing team has a significant injury, but the market knows how to adjust to that.
Yes.
And
yes.
And I guess you need someone like you to figure out the injury probability. Think, okay, do I bet on like a look ahead line or down the line? Because you have some advanced insight into the future rather than betting on what you know now.
Yeah. For example, I mean, injuries can always change a lot, but I think we have, NFL is still a very small data sports, but right now, I don't know what would need to happen in the first round for us to drastically change our mind on some of the teams. I mean, Brock Purdy would be an interesting case, because we should not be surprised, I think, if he has a complete dud game in the wildcard round. But then we don't need to adjust, because they will likely be out anyway. So, yeah.
What if he has a bad game, but Christian McCaffrey gets a few insanely large runs or screenplays, and then they advance because of it, and you think, okay,
yes,
McCaffrey will do it again.
Yes, and I think from that point of view, we might get a performance every now and then in the wildcard round that is completely fluky, like a team wins with defense, special teams, and screens, like you have mentioned. But even then, I think that the market, especially in the playoffs, is so major and efficient that they will correct that stuff very quickly.
Now, what are the max bets going to be right before kickoff on the divisional games and the wildcard games?
I think that will be like a regular season Sunday game, maybe a little bit higher in some places, but circa on a Sunday is taking 200K on a NFL side. I don't think that they will be higher than that, but they might be a little bit higher on totals as compared to regular season games.
Mm. All right. Do you have any last words for the NFL playoffs and what bettors should look out for?
Let me close out with a team or with a Super Bowl future that I'm currently eyeing or that I'm leaning towards. And that's the Chargers in the ballpark of 25-1. Let me explain. So I think that the Chargers have all the ingredients for a deep playoff run. Good quarterback at times, in terms of the upside, elite quarterback. They are almost completely healthy on offense. They might even get Rashawn Slater back. And on defense, they have a very, very good pass rush with Joey Bosa back, Khalil Mack, Kyle Van Noy. Their defense is running very hot. I also think that Brandon Staley is coming out with very good game plans week in, week out. And when you combine that you have a stable offense, a good quarterback, and a pass rush that can create havoc for 60 minutes, that's usually a very good recipe for success in the playoffs. They might draw, or they will likely draw the Jaguars in the first round, or if the Titans win, they will draw the Titans. Second one would be at Arrowhead. They have already played the Chiefs very closely twice this year. And if they beat the Chiefs, it will likely be Bengals or Chiefs in the championship round. And Bengals or Bills in the championship round, and both of those teams have average to below average offensive lines, where the Chargers have a great matchup advantage in the trenches. So I think 25-1 is a little bit too high. In the end, I will be very disappointed because they charge themselves out of the playoffs with a blocked punt, blocked field goal or whatever, or a last-minute interception, classic Charger way. And they will also have to play four consecutive road games now. But in general, I think that the Chargers are finally healthy, are looking like their preseason version, and I think they could be very dangerous in the playoffs.
I think this is all great to hear because without even knowing what you were going to pick, my simulation had four good bets, and you already have, we agree on two of them, Tampa Bay and the Chargers. Well, thanks for coming on, Fabian, and I hope you enjoy watching the playoffs all the way in Germany, even if it's at 1 a.m.
Yes, that won't matter because especially the wildcard round will be very special. I will probably watch the first night game on Saturday, and then on Sunday we will probably be do prime time on the Hammer again. So yeah, I cannot wait, especially wildcard weekend. There could be so many great matchups like Dallas at Tampa Bay, Los Angeles Chargers at Jacksonville, Bills at home. Could be some really, really fun games and a great weekend.
Thank you for tuning in to 90 Degrees, presented by the Hammer Betting Network. Head over to our website, thehammer.bet, for all your sports betting needs. If you enjoyed the show, click that like button. If you're new to the channel, hit the subscribe button to be notified when we release a new show. If you've made it this far, drop a comment on what your favorite play for the NFL playoffs is, especially if you disagree with me. Thank you. Good night and good luck.
Big bomb, bomb, bangers.
Boogie down, pits.
Bangers. Big bangers, bangers, bomb.
Boogie down, pits.